Vishus Marina, Rav Shlita. Coming out so soon after Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, a day of reflection. And now we move away from Yom Kippur towards Sukkot, and on Shabbos Chol HaMoed, this week on Shabbos, we're going to read the Megillah of Koheles. Koheles is surprisingly put into Sukkot, where you might at first sight when you read it think it's a bit depressing. In fact, it's something which is commonly quoted at a hesped when people pass away, and some bits might look a bit morbid, and it's written that Shlomo HaMelech wrote it at the end of his life. He wrote Shir HaShirim at the beginning of his life, he wrote Mishlei in the middle of his life, and at the end of his life, in what might appear as a rather depressed, morbid state, he wrote Koheles. So you might ask the question, why are we reading such a work on the happiest festival of Sukkot, Zaman Simchaseinu? After all, the Lashon of Simcha, of joy, is only written once by Pesach. It's not really written at all by Shavuos. The Gemara loans it out from the others, and it's written three times, V'samachto v'chagecho, it's written three times by Sukkot. So why is it that on Zaman Simchaseinu we are reading this kind of material? And if you pass these texts around, we can perhaps refer to a few psukim here and there. Shlomo HaMelech is saying, all is vanity, all the rivers flow to the sea and the sea is not full, and the world is a monotonous place and the eyes and ears are never satisfied. He says, I've built houses, I've planted vineyards, I've planted orchards, and I made pools, I bought slaves, I amassed huge wealth, but all is vanity. In fact, he had 700 wives and 300 concubines, 1,000 women. I mean, well, we might say, well, what is more surprising than that, that you're such a sad man? But if we look at the very beginning, chapter 1, verse 2, he says, everything is vanity. It's all futile. Everything is vanity. And he speaks about life as something which he hated in chapter 2 verse 17. He says he was depressed. Look at chapter 2 verse 18. And later on in the beginning of chapter 3, Lakol Zaman, there's a time for everything. There's a time to be born, there's a time to die. And in chapter 4 verse 2 he says the dead are better off. He criticizes riches, and in chapter 5 verse 12 he says that being rich is a misfortune. At the beginning of chapter 7, where he says, Tov Shem Hashem and Tov, a good name is better than good oil, but the day of death is better than the day of birth, and that it's better to go to a house of mourning than to a house of feasting. So the whole impression which he's gathering together is a very depressed one, or so it seems. Well, the Ramban says that there are really three purposes of Koheles. One is not to pursue the world's pleasures. Number two, that man has a spiritual essence which is vital to God's plan. We have this purpose in our lives. And thirdly, that human intelligence cannot understand God's ways. And those are really the three messages which we get out from Koheles. But if we have a look at the Pasuk at the beginning, chapter 1, verse 2, which is the one perhaps most often quoted from Koheles, Havel Avolim Amar Koheles, Havel Avolim Akol Hovel. Chazal speak about this as symbolizing the number 7, because Havolim 2, Havolim plural, so we say 2, Havel Avolim then makes 3, Amar Koheles, Havel Avolim, then you've got another 3, Hakol Hovel, so you've got the mention of Hovel, of vanity, that life is futile, you have it 7 times. So some of Forshim are referring there to the 7 days of creation and the material life, and some say it relates to the 70 years of a person's life. The Ma'am Lois gives an interesting idea. He says there are 7 stages in a person's life. The baby is born, and the baby is treated like a king, because everyone's fussing around the little new baby. But then, as the baby gets a bit older, because it makes a lot of mess, and one has to change the nappies or diapers often, it's like the pig. And then as it gets older, towards the age of 10, and it jumps around wildly without recognizing the dangers that it befalls, it's like the goat. And then as the child grows older into an adolescent and to a young man, and he wants to groom himself nicely in order to feel he's attractive to women, he makes himself groomed like the horse. And then as he gets older and he gets married and he's got on himself the burdens of looking after the family and earning a panosa and having to pay tax to the inland revenue, so he's like the chamor, the donkey who has to carry heavy loads on its shoulders. And then as he gets a bit older still, he has to bark at his children in order to maintain a bit of discipline, so he's like the dog. And then as he gets older and he becomes unfortunately pathetic and people laugh at him when he becomes a cripple, they laugh at him as though he's a monkey. And those are seven stages of a person's life, but says the Me'am Lois, if a person follows the ways of Torah, then he will remain like a king through all his life, just like it says with David HaMelech, HaMelech Zokein. He was old, Rabbayomim, but it says Melech, he was the king. So the question is why we're reading this, what seems to be a depressing Megillah. On Zaman Simchaseinu, says the Avodrom, he says, Shlomo HaMelech, in fact, wrote this and presented it on the festival of Sukkot, specifically in order to prevent lightheadedness, that people starting eating and drinking on Yom Tov, and with all the frivolity and lightheadedness which comes about, they will forget what their real purpose is in life. So he felt as though it's a moderating force. It gives us a sort of red line that we should not cross when we are celebrating on Yom Tov. But also, the idea of Koheles can give us the message that, you know, we're leaving our comfortable home and we're going into the sukkah, and as a result of that we're giving up the worldly pleasures for a bit of discomfort in order to serve Hashem. And that too gives us an idea that the world is futile in its materialistic state, and so we're reading Koheles at the time that we are living in the sukkah. And of course there are the reflections following from Yom Kippur that life is vanity, life is futile, and we have a purpose to follow. But we'll come back to this a bit later. The Ibn Ezra actually highlights a number of contradictions, or apparent contradictions, in Koheles. And the Gemara in Shabbos Daf Lamed Amud Beis actually says that Chazal wanted to do away with Koheles. They wanted to ban it because they felt there were apparent contradictions, but because of the ending, which Sof Tavoy says, HaKol Nishma Elokim Yiro, you should refer Hashem, they felt that there was a message to take away with you. But just to give an idea of some of these apparent contradictions, in chapter 2, verse 2, Lizchok Omarti Mehulo, which is basically saying laughter is a good thing, is a praiseworthy thing. But then, later on, in chapter 7, verse 3, it says, Tov Kas Mischok, and Kas there is translated as grief, grief is better than laughter. So there's a kind of contradiction there. And then we've got in chapter 2, verse 2, the Simcha Maze Oseh, what is the point of having Simcha, of having rejoicing? And then later on in chapter 8, verse 15, Vishibachti Ani Es HaSimcha, I praise the idea of celebration. So Ibn Ezra explains the praising of celebration is the Simcha Shel Mitzvah, like a wedding. But the deploring of Simcha in other verses we've quoted are where the Simcha is not the Simcha Shel Mitzvah. There are some puzzling statements. If we look at chapter 3, this is very often quoted, the very beginning of chapter 3, Lakol Zaman, there's a time for everything. There's a time to be born, there's a time to die, there's a time to plant, there's a time to uproot the planting, there's a time to kill, there's a time to heal. But if we look at those words, and we look at verse 4, it says, Eis livkos ve'eis lischot, there's a time to cry and there's a time to laugh. Eis safod ve'eis rakod, there's a time to cry and there's a time to dance. Alright, we can understand this. Sometimes Nebuchadnezzar, a person dies, sometimes the person gets married. But have you noticed there's no lamed there at Esafod the Estrakod? Like where you got a lamed being the prefix to, doesn't exist there. And yet it exists with most of the others. And it was very interesting for me personally, because when I was sitting shiva for my father's Achrona Livracha, it was just that week that my daughter got engaged. And it was a very strange mixed feeling, because everyone was saying Mazel Tov, or holding them back from saying it, and then one is sitting in mourning for one's own parent. And there was pressure to make the vort very quickly, because the Chosin was going back to Eretz Yisrael, so in the end they said, let's make the vote 2 days after the Shiva, and it just felt very strange. So the Rosh Hashiva from Manchester, Rav Kraus, he said to me this pasuk. He said, you'll notice there's a lamed missing from Eis Sefod for Eis Rekod. Why? Because the two are not really separated according to their times. There are times when the two come together at the same time. That just like the Rav has to go to the Levaya and then go straight from there to a wedding. And strangely, in our lives, we have this kind of conflict. But it's a reality of life, and it's one of the sensitivities of life. So talking about the sensitivities of life, there's an interesting verse just later on in chapter 3, verse 17. Yud Zayin, 16. The Odra Isi Tachas Hashomesh Mekom HaMishpot. I've observed beneath the sun, in place of justice, there is wickedness. Shoma HaResha U'Mekom HaTzedek Shoma HaRosha. In the place of righteousness, there is wickedness. Now, this is surely a very puzzling thing to say. That in a place where there is goodness and righteousness, there is wickedness. How can this be? I heard recently Rabbi Joseph Perlman quoting a story about the Rebbe from Zantz, the Divrei Chaim, who was helping a poor man. This poor man came to him for help, and he asked him what town he's from. And so the next time the Rebbe of Zantz was in this town, and he met the gevir of the town, the one who financed all the projects and was a very chosh of a mensch, so he said to the gevir of the town, how is this poor fellow who I met not long ago? He was collecting money. So this gevir said, I don't know who you're talking about. What do you mean you don't know who you're talking about? You don't know what goes on inside your own town? This fellow came to me asking for money, and you're the one who was helping everybody in the institutions. He says, look, I'm so busy, I've got to earn a living, and straight after I've finished working, I go to the Beis HaMidrash and I learn. But you don't occupy yourself with finding out who needs help? He says, I'm too busy, I'm learning. What do you mean? He says, I'm learning Torah, what do you want? I can't bother myself with all these things when I'm learning. So the Rebbe of Zantz gave him a bit of Musa. He said to him, you know, there are two mentions of the word Ish in Parshas Bereishis. One is by Yosef. Yosef meets a man, and the man says, you know, Matav Akesh, what are you looking for? Can I help you? And he says, yeah, I'm looking for my brothers, and he helps him find the way, and he goes with him and says, this is it, though, soy not. And then there is another mention of Ish in Parshas Bereishis, and that is with Yaakov Avinu Vayorek Ish Imo, and he started fighting with this Ish, and it was the Saro Shel Esav. So Rashi brings down the Chazal that the first man we're talking about with Yosef, well, it was really the second in that order, was Gavriel, the angel. So how do we know that in one case it was Gavriel the angel, and another place the Ish is Saro Shel Esav? It's like the two opposites. So the Rebbe of Zantz said, you see, because the one who went out of his way to help others, the one who was trying to make sure that the stranger was helped, that was the Simon, it was Gavriel. But the one who wasn't doing anything to help, but just comes along and starts a fight, he was minding his own business. That was the Saro Shel Esav. So you should stop the learning a bit and go and help the people around you. In trying to understand this pasuk, that in the place of righteousness one finds wickedness, there's a story which was told by Aaron Kotler, Rabbi Aaron Kotler, the Rosh Yeshiva of Lakewood, Zichrono Livracha. And once an avreich, a young married man came to him and asked him a question. Listen, my wife is not feeling well, and she's having problems looking after the kids and feeding them and shopping. But I've got my learning to do. I've got my chavrusas to do. I've got to go to my shirim. What am I meant to do? So the Rosh Hashiva said to him, close your gemara and go and help your wife. So the fellow went out and did what he was told to do. And Rabbi Aaron Kotler started crying. And so his accomplice next to him said, well, why are you crying? He said, this fellow's been learning in our yeshiva for so long, and he doesn't even realize it, that he has to ask such a question. Surely he should know for sure that his wife is not feeling well and the kids need help. Of course he should close his gemara and go and help. And there is a certain mentality which we have to realize, and maybe this is the time, you know, Yom Kippur time, we've been reflecting, it's not just mitzvahs ben odom lamokom, but it's also mitzvahs ben odom lachaveira, that maybe we're stepping on those a little bit. And with those stories like the Rebbe of Zantz and with Aaron Cutler, it gives us a certain message. There's one issue which I often find which is troublesome, and that is there's a certain place whenever I go there to daven. It's a place in Golders Green, no names mentioned, and it's difficult always to find a seat because it's crowded. But I go there because there's a simcha going on, so I go there nice and early. That way you get a seat. And every single time I go to this place, somebody comes up to me and says, "You're sitting in my seat." All right, I'm very sorry. Of course, this fellow comes late, so by the time you go trying to find another seat, you can't find another seat. And every single time I go to this shul, somebody says, "You're sitting in my seat." And I feel myself, you know, I've worked with goyim, and I know goyim who would never dream of doing such a thing. All right, let me just get my talus from my seat. I'll go somewhere else. But I find this out. All right, it says in the Sefer Shevet Musa that it's a wonderful thing to daven in the same place every day, that you have a mokum kavua. Yeah, fine. But is your kavana so greatly affected if you're sitting in somewhere else? We know from the halachas of Kriyat Shema that the chosan does read the Kriyat Shema on his wedding night, because kavana is not such a great thing nowadays. But this, you're sitting in my seat. I know of a case of somebody who never lost his whole family in the war, and he managed to escape from Germany and go over the border to Switzerland, and he went into a shul, and it was Rosh Hashanah, and they said, "You didn't book a ticket? You didn't have a seat?" No. But he went to a seat which he thought he could occupy because he knew somebody, a distant uncle of his, had that seat. They went and sat in that seat, and he was kicked out of it. He was kicked out of the seat. He was so depressed from the experience, he walked out of the shul, he went away, he got a job on a farm, and he drifted away from Yiddishkeit, and he married out. All right, you might say to me, "Well, that's a bit extreme, isn't it?" But we don't know how sensitivities of life can be when we do such insensitive things. Fortunately, years and years later, he finally came round to thinking about his roots, and his children brought home things about Yiddishkeit, and the family transformed, and his non-Jewish wife in fact went through a geirus, a kosher, proper geirus, and his children were brought up the Derech HaTorah, and now he's got grandchildren who are learning in yeshiva, learning in kollel. It's an amazing story. But why did all this hassle have to happen? Just because somebody was saying, "You're sitting in my seat." And sometimes it's difficult because, you know, it's a mitzvah on a parent, and sometimes a parent might be aggressive. The Sefer Charedim says you can always find something good about a parent in order to respect them. You can always find something good about anything. When the Talmidim of Rav Rabinov came to him and said, "Why are you being so praiseworthy about Israel?" He came back from Israel saying how wonderful it was. And he said to them, "Urei b'tuv Yerushalayim kol yomei chayecha." Look at the good side of things. So that's an idea which I think comes out from this message of Koheles, that beware that even in the places of righteousness you might find something which is wicked. Now, we've been saying Shana Tova Umasukah. Some people just say Shana Tova. And Reb Chaim Halpern brought down from one or two sources that really one should not say Shana Tova for Rosh Hashanah. Why? Because obviously it's going to be a Shana Tova, because everything that Hashem does is for the best. So why should we say Shana Tova? But if you say Shana Tova Umasukah, it should be a sweet year. And if you look at chapter 11 of Koheles, verse 7, you've got this idea of sweetness coming out. Umasukah, that sweet is the light. And the Mefarshim say light here means life. Sweet is life, a tovle namely rosas hashomesh, and it's good for the eyes to behold the sun. And I can't help thinking about when I was a little child and we left primary school and we went around with our autograph book to all the teachers, and then afterwards I went up to the lollipop lady who helped us across the road, and I asked her to sign her name in my autograph book, and she wrote these words. She wrote, "Only to feel the rain, the sun, the wind, only to be alive and feel that life is sweet." Wow. And we say Shana Tova Umasukah, that we shouldn't say Shana Tova because everybody should have a sweet year. We take it for granted, and we shouldn't. And when it comes to the idea of the sweetness of life and joy of life and simcha of life, there's a Gemara in Tanis which is good to reflect on after Yom Kippur. Gemara in Tanis, Daf Kaf Beis, where Rav Bruka Chazor, he met Eliyahu HaNavi. He was in a marketplace and he met Eliyahu HaNavi. And he said to Eliyahu HaNavi, tell me something. Point out to me the people who are in this marketplace who are B'nai Olam Haba. And he pointed at two people and he says, those two men there are B'nai Olam Haba. So he went up to these two men, he says, what do you do? What do you make your tachlis in life? And he said, we try to be happy and we try to make other people happy. And that is what they do. And these are the people who are B'nai Olam Haba, because they try and make other people happy. So now when we look at Megillah of Koheles and we reflect on what seems to be a lot of depressing things, the tachlis is really to try and create happiness. And simcha, joy, what is the true meaning of joy? There's an interesting hakdomah in the Sefer Egli Tal. The Sefer Egli Tal, which is the Sukkot Shavah, and he writes about Shabbos. But at the beginning he does a hakdomah which is quite profound, and he says there are people around who think that when you're learning Torah it's a very serious business. Well, obviously it's a serious business, but they think that you're not really allowed to get enjoyment out of it, because enjoyment is something which is havel avolim, it's futile. And they think that when you learn Torah it's got to be treated at as something very serious indeed. And he said nothing can be further. This is a mistake. No, this is just ridiculous that people think that way. He says when people learn Torah, he said they should get joy out of it, up to the extent that it's nivloim b'domo, that it's absorbed in their blood. That is how important it is to have simcha. And there is a din that you're not allowed to learn Torah on Tisha B'Av except for the sad subjects. Why? Because learning Torah gives us simcha. Ah, you might say, but why is it that when I'm learning Torah, I don't feel any joy or simcha? Well, then it must mean you're not learning Torah properly. B'kudei Hashem Yishorim Masamche Leiv, that the precepts of Hashem give joy. So, if we are going to get a true sense of simcha, a true sense of joy, although when we read Koheles, the feeling of life might be futile, might be depressing, so awareness of one's own life is achieving, is elating. If we compare and contrast the secular world with the Torah world, the secular world, you've got the rat race. Havel avolim, it's all futile, says Koheles. It's all pointless. To achieve riches, and then to achieve riches, you get jealousy because the other one has more than you have. The trouble with the rat race is that if you win, you're still a rat. When you follow the ways of the Torah, you're competing only with yourself. You're not competing with anybody else, because everybody has their own madrega. And we get lots of stories, the Hasidim tell lots of stories about a fellow who could only read Aleph Beis, and the Rebbe would stop and wait until this person had finished before he would carry on, because this person was just saying Aleph Beis, and the Rebbe was putting together his Aleph Beis into words. And that everybody's got potential. One boy goes to yeshiva and he can't cope so easily, but he's trying. And another one is an Iloy. But they're both on the same level, if we recognize that they're both competing, not with other people, but they're competing with themselves, with their potentials, and that each individual has the ability. And that is the difference between the secular world and the Torah world. Rav Tversky writes that in the secular world, you're judged according to your productivity. What you can earn, what you can do, what you can achieve. And Nebuch, a person who is ill and frail in hospital or a nursing home, who's not producing, and the people think, well, he's a liability. This is the way the non-Jewish world look at it. These people are a victim of the so-called culture of the non-Jewish world. But when Torah is our value, and it's in our capacity for our achievement, then we don't see people like that as a liability. It's a zechus that we are able to do good deeds for these people, and by that way we elevate ourselves spiritually. And that Hashem gives us a purpose by means of these people. And hence you've got the differences between what is the achievements of the outside world and the achievements of ours. And there we're trying to distinguish then what is simcha, what is joy. And that brings us then back to our original question as to why are we reading Koheles on Sukkos. The first answer we gave was that to draw the red line, as it were, that Shlomo HaMelech was saying to us, you know, you're going to let your hair down on Sukkos, you're going to be eating and drinking and things might go a bit too far. Hold on a minute, remember that life is futile and don't do this and don't do that. And remember the tachlis, that the day of death is better than the day of birth. Why is that? There's the ship which goes sailing and everybody's cheering it. And there's the ship which is coming in from its voyage and nobody looks at it. But really, we should be cheering the ship which is coming in because it survived the tribulations of the high waves on the high seas, and the new ship which is going out on its maiden voyage, we don't know what trials and tribulations will before it. So the Sefer Darkei Musa asks this question about Koheles. You know, on Sukkos we're going out of our comfort and we're going into the Sukkah, and we are of course in Zaman Simchaseinu, and he brings this view that when you have the ordinary materialistic simcha, we get the jealousy, we get kinor, we get taivo, and it's something which has to be avoided. So he quotes from his Rebbe, Reb Moshe Rosenstein, the Mashgiach of the Yeshiva of Lumza. He says, "Regilin lo matam lo makarim b'sukkos Koheles." We have this common idea that we read Koheles on Sukkos because it's Zaman Simchaseinu, and we are worried, "Mufachadim shelo yismechu yosem idai," that people might overdo it. Therefore we read Koheles to limit and show that there are limitations on this world and that we should reduce the amount of simcha. And he says, no, it's really completely different. It's the other way around. He says, one should be very happy on Sukkos, but when, as long as a person is tied up to the vanities and frivolities of this life, of this world, that is not called happiness. That is not befitting happiness. Because he is always jealous of what the other one's got and that he's got less. Can you imagine the guy spends £10,000 on his personalised number plate and the other guy feels he's inferior because he only spent £5,000 on it? Have you ever been to a Hesped where they said, wow, he had a personalised number plate? These are the frivolities of the world. And this eats up the heart of a man. And it really brings upon him sadness. We therefore read Koheles on Sukkos, to understand that what we think is simcha is really havel avolim and is really frivolous. And it's not worthy to have to chase after it. And then, and only then, a person can reach the idea of simcha. Then we get the kudei Hashem meshorim mesamchei lev, that we have a proper rejoicing. And so when it comes to Kiddush and Havdalah and four cups of wine and Purim, that is, says the Al-Sheikh, what Koheles means in Perek Tes. He says, go eat your bread with joy and drink your wine with a glad heart, for Hashem has approved your deeds. That is the idea of simcha in its done b'shleimus, with service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in moderation. And so, I wish you a Chag Sameach. Thank you.